Bob King is the author of the blog Astro Bob. He's an amateur astronomer. He's taught community education classes on astronomy. He's also the photo editor at the Duluth News Tribune. He's got a new book out. It's called Night Sky with the Naked Eye, How to Find Planets, Constellations, Satellites, and Other Night Sky Wonders Without a Telescope. Bob joins us now. Morning, Bob.
Hey, good morning. How are you doing, Heidi?
Good. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you for having me on.
So when did you get the bug of astronomy in your life?
Well, like a lot of people, I guess, when they were young. I was a kid when I got interested in the nighttime sky. And I was also interested in the weather at the time, too. I was very much into the clouds, and I just took an interest in the stars, too. I was about 11 years old or so, but when I went to bed, which was always too early, I'd look out my window and look at the stars rising over the neighbor's roof, and I'd try to identify the constellations.
Oh, so you did research. I mean, did you even do that very same research on clouds? Did you know what kind of clouds you were looking
at? Yes, I did. As soon as I got curious about the clouds, I wanted to know what types of clouds they were and where they came from. And, you know, it's just, I think curiosity is just natural for any children, for any child. And I was curious about what was going on over our heads.
So stars and the constellations are a constant. Why the constant passion for it if things don't necessarily drastically change out there?
Well, that's a wonderful question. Well, to me, they're like, you know, like the seasons. That the same sort of things return with every season, like snow, or you see the very first flowers. And to me, seeing Orion come up again in November or watching the star Vega rise in the spring, they're just like old friends. They're part of the whole seasonal scenery. So that's one of the reasons I like the stars. And they also, the planets are out there too, and they're always moving around, so it's fun to track the planets. There's satellites. There's all kinds of interesting other weather-related phenomena, like halos around the moon or moon dogs. So to me, there's a constancy to it, but there's also things that are changing all the time too.
And what does it mean to you? Because when you're looking at the stars, you might be getting up really early or staying up late. Yeah. You may be with people, but a lot of times you're by yourself when you're doing something like this. What does that actual act of stargazing mean to you? Would you say it's kind of...
Well, you guys have such wonderful questions. They're so deep. they're excellent questions because there is the knowledge that you gain by looking up at the night sky and learning about the universe in which you live. You know, it's nice to know what's happening out there and to understand what's around you. The more we learn, the better we can appreciate. But there's a whole other dimension to stargazing, and I do touch on this in the book, and that is, I guess you could call it a more spiritual aspect when you're out. What it does for you spiritually, psychologically, to just absorb, just to be out there and kind of get a sense of your place in the cosmos. And I think just looking up at the night sky, especially if you're in a dark place, it can really give you an idea of kind of where you stand in life. So there's that, too.
Well, I'm just simply a gazer. I just look at it and I enjoy it. I know two things. I know the Big Dipper and the Little Dipper.
Yeah.
I'm being sarcastic, but truly I do. And I've never, like, done a lot of research, but I think that's why your book is going to come in so handy, is for people like myself who love the stars but don't dig deep, and you just have it. You can just check it out and get everything you need right in this little book.
Yeah, I try to go into the bright, and a lot of people are just like you. I teach community ed, and I'd say most people know, like, the Big Dipper and Orion, and they might know the Little Dipper, but that's kind of the thing, is to learn more about the constellations. And the book only doesn't go into all 88 of them, but it goes into the bright ones. I figured let's start with the easy ones and then go from there.
We're talking with Bob King. His new book is out. It's called Night Sky with the Naked Eye. You also have helpful hints in there. You know, this is kind of about, you don't need the big high-powered telescopes or binoculars.
Exactly.
But you can have some assistance on how to find things through your phone. What do you recommend?
Oh, I know. We live in just this amazing era. I mean, it used to be you had to... And a lot of people still like to use them, kind of a star wheel where you can just turn this dial and it shows you what constellations are up at that hour. But the phone apps are just amazing now, and there are at least there are two or three of them that I'm sure your listeners would find really handy. The one is just called StarMap. Actually, there's a couple of variations, but they're all online. A lot of them are free. You can get them for Android or iPhone. And I use one just called, let's see if I can look at mine right now. I think it's called StarChart for iPhone. And you just download it. It finds out where you are, and then you hold it up to the sky, and it will show you the constellations that are visible right then, anytime. And I always get a kick out of seeing people use the application because they're often staring down at the floor because they like to see what's beneath the Earth, what stars are happening down there, too. So that's one great app. Another one is there are apps for locating the International Space Station. Well, it will alert you when there's a bright pass coming over wherever you live. And then the third app that's really handy is called Aurora Forecast. So it will alert you when there's a possibility for a Northern Lights in your area.
Wow.
You know, what's exciting for me is, simple exciting, is the fact that we can all look at the moon, and I will look at it in my binoculars. But I love this page section on page 129 where you show where the missions had landed. And so when you look at the moon, you could say, they landed right there.
Yeah, isn't that the coolest?
That is cool.
Yeah,
really,
I mean,
cool.
It's just like you can just look up, and even with the naked eye, at least you can get some sense where, you know, on the face of the man on the moon, Apollo 11 is, Apollo 16, and so on.
So Bob, we're at the beginning of December, December 8th, but we've seen just months of cloudy sky, so there hasn't been a lot of stargazing. But what should we be looking for in this month and maybe January?
Well, you know, as stargazers are always optimists. We have to be. You know, there must be a clear night coming sometime. But there are some nice events happening this month. For instance, I just mentioned about the space station. There is a pass of the International Space Station over Grand Rapids, Duluth, the region, every single night of December. So the next clear night, you can look and find out when to look for the space station. For listeners, there's a spot called Spot the Station. They can type that in to their browser, just those three words, Spot the Station, and it will take them to a place where they can put in the name of their town, and then it will show the time of the next pass. The other things that are happening, there's two really big events, but they're happening at the same time, which is a little unfortunate. But on December 13th, that would be what, middle of next week, December 13th, we have a full moon and also a meteor shower happening at the same time. That's Tuesday evening, Wednesday morning. And the meteor shower is called the Geminids. And normally, you're not going to believe this, this is the best shower of the year. Normally, you'd get about 100 meteors per hour. But you know what happens when the full moon's out? It's going to cut those numbers down. But it will still be a great shower to go out and look for. And the good part is that it happens earlier in the evening, like around 9:30, 10 o'clock, 10:30. So you don't have to get up at 3 in the morning, necessarily, to see the Geminids.
Another thing that I find... Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, we should put that on our calendars. It's next week, Tuesday night.
Tuesday night, yeah. Okay. Then it'll be... we just had that big supermoon in November, and we had beautifully clear skies for our region. This will also be another supermoon. In other words, a closer than normal moon, but not as close as the November moon. About 1,800 miles further away, but still a big, bright moon on the night of the 13th.
You know, times have changed, and now we see tons of satellites out there. How can you tell which one is a satellite versus maybe a plane, and how many are up there, and how fast are they traveling?
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, wow. Well, anything that orbits the Earth, right, is a satellite, any man-made object, so there's like thousands of them up there. The brightest, easiest, biggest is the International Space Station. And there are a whole bunch of other ones, too. Some are active. You know, they're doing work up there, surveilling. But some, and a lot of them, that you'd see on an average night are rocket stages that were used to lift the satellites and put them in orbit.
Oh.
Sometimes that final stage ends up in orbit, too, and it just keeps going around the Earth.
Oh.
The Earth. So, and there are, I've listed resources in there to help you find out or to identify which of those objects are what. Airplanes are different. Airplanes are constantly flashing as they go. You know, they've got the safety lights going red and green. And if you have any doubt, you can put a pair of binoculars on it. If you see color on it, you got an airplane and not a satellite.
All right, because there is a lot of movement going on up there.
There really are. There's a lot of blinking. Well, some satellites tumble, as you know, especially those rocket stages. And as they tumble, they will flash and then dim and then flash. But it's different from an airplane, and it's always more like a white color and not a no color, no green or red.
You know, there's lots of good information in this book, but there's also great photographs. And that can't be easy to get.
Well, yeah. That's my, the photographic part of me, I guess, because I love photography. That's why I work at the newspaper. And one of the things I wanted to make sure of is that the book had some beautiful pictures in it, because there's so many beautiful sights in the heavens. So a number of the pictures of my own, but I did have to contact different photographers to get permission to use theirs.
All right.
So and there's diagrams, and I made healthy use of Photoshop. And some people looking at the book will see kind of some familiar-looking scenes. They'll see the tops of fir trees and pictures and spruces, and they'll go, that looks like kind of the northern Minnesota. And by gosh, it is.
Well, talking to you, Bob, I think it's a good reminder that, you know, we are lucky. We live in northern Minnesota, and so we do have darkness, so we can see the stars. Not everybody is able to really see stars the way we can.
I know. I was just down in St. Paul about a week ago, and people were talking about that how little they can see from the city. And so it is necessary to get outside of a city, and we are very, very lucky. For anyone listening that is living in a place where it's light polluted, there's a little description in the book about an online atlas where you can go, type in your city, and it will show you a light pollution map. It will show you where, and it will have the Google Maps overlaid on top of it, so you can plot out a route to find the darkest skies nearest your town.
Wow.
Yeah, it's just the online resources are amazing, and I made sure to incorporate them in the book. But we are very fortunate to be able to have dark skies. And, of course, there are things we can do to make sure we keep those skies dark, too, like using the right kind of lighting.
What's the right kind of lighting?
Well, the lights are being changed over nowadays to LED lights. And those are the very bright ones. I'm not sure how it is in Grand Rapids, but in Duluth, we're switching over to it. It's a much brighter, more intense light. You see it in parking lots a lot. As long as that lighting is in a housing where no light protrudes beneath the horizontal, goes beneath the housing and shines out into the night where you don't need the light, that's a good housing for the light. But some lights, especially the ornamental ones you see, they'll have no shield around them. And so their light will shine out and up, and that light goes into the sky. So you can work with your city council to make sure the right kind of lighting is used in your city projects.
That is Bob King, otherwise known as Astro Bob. We put a link to his blog at our Facebook page. His new book is called Night Sky with the Naked Eye, How to Find Planets, Constellations, Satellites, and Other Night Sky Wonders Without a Telescope. Bob, it was great to talk to you. Hope to do it again.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.